Yeah, what do you want to talk about redundancy? We got two speakers, too.
Yeah, one of us faints.
Fail over. All right. You want to know one of my favorite things? The favorite things I've got from this conference is that we, like, people in this room, are building a world that I desperately have needed for, like, more than a decade. I've been a distributed systems developer for 15 years. And like the very first version of Bing was running on a computer under my desk. And
John, that's so, not really a distributed system, that's a computer under your desk.
I've been a distributed systems developer for 14 years. And in that time, I've learned a lot about how to build a scalable system, make failover, all the techniques that really make a distributed system work. I got great at building it, but operating them and managing them were a mystery. They were really hard for me, and that was the gap that I needed. It was hard to figure out those things. The information wasn't available. The way that the theory I've evolved over the years is that the only way that I learned those first few big lessons about distributed systems, like, for example, that there's a really good chance that when you first upgrade a system, that you're going to take the whole thing down for a long time. Like, there will be a thundering herd going back. I learned that one the hard way. I also learned the whole echo problem. You know, the one where you have retries throughout your whole infrastructure. Things start to get slow, and then your front end retries 6 times to your middle tier, and your middle tier retries, now it's going to be 36 times to the back tier, and the back tier is getting like 10 billion requests now. These massive system failures were how I learned. And my theory, the journey that I'm on, I think the journey that we're all on, is we each have to destroy our systems and companies 100 times. We each are owed 100 massive system failures to learn each of those lessons. It'd be kind of neat if we could each do different ones and like destroy our systems in new creative ways, though. Maybe if we could share the failures we had, and I think that's actually what we're doing here. That's what SRE is to me. It's telling past developer me, maybe you should leave the retries on the client. Maybe you should think about not upgrading all your machines at once. This is how I get to go and learn all the things that I need to know, learn a lot of these mistakes that many of the teams that I work with are making. This is how I get to share those lessons to other people, and I get to build tools, build the world that I want to live in.
So I want to ask you all a question. How many of you are more inspired leaving this conference than you were coming in because of a talk you saw or a conversation you had? Yeah, we're all really passionate about this industry, and we're passionate about the problems that we're solving. And it's because we care so much that it can be really emotionally hard, and it can be hard to understand why sometimes engagements fail. Why is SRE sometimes hard to sell? Now, if you work for a company that has a mature SRE organization, and people are lining up outside the door to get your help, that is an awesome place to be. But it never starts out that way. Just like that prototype you built on the plane on the way here isn't gonna scale to 1 billion users without years of failure and hardship and hard-won lessons. It can be frustrating, and the easy mistake to make is that people are being irrational. When people are resisting the things you're telling them, they are being totally unreasonable. But that's not true. There are very often reasons for why people might not be on board with your grand distributed systems utopian reliability visions. Sometimes there are rational reasons that are keeping them from being able to do the things you want them to do. And a lot of other times, people totally get it. They get why automation is going to be valuable. They get your vision, but they don't actually trust you to be the person to do it for them.
So we have been through a lot of successes and stories and failure stories ourselves. Like, I'd already triggered like the first probably 6 company destroying failures. They didn't really destroy the company, but just the service for a while. Most of the company survived. The first 6 of those I'd already gotten through, and I'm on that journey to find the other 94. And when we joined Microsoft SRE, we're like, there's so many people out there that could be failing right now. Like, I want to go out and find out what those are. In fact, what I could do is like document all the 100 failures and not have to go through the other 94 myself. So let's go look at all the stories, talk to the people at other SRE engagements, people who have been engaging with other teams in SRE, and find out what they've run into. And what we found, to my surprise, is that, like, this is always surprising to a developer. It turns out the problem's people. It turns out people are usually the problem in the way before you get to these technical problems. So this is gonna be a cultural talk, unexpectedly. I wanted to get up and talk about the 100 failures. We're gonna talk about the failures that get in the way in the first place, that make it so you don't even get to talk about the failure.
And what we've done is, of all the stories we've collected, we've taken some of the ones that we think are most representative of really common mistakes that people make and common anti-patterns that we see when you're first starting out trying to build your SRE reputation and you're first starting out trying to get your name recognized and get teams to work with you. Now, fair disclaimer, we've taken some artistic licenses with these stories. Some things will sound more catastrophic than they were. Some things will sound less catastrophic than they were. And not all these stories are personally ours.
In fact, most of aren't, but don't worry. We'll take credit for them. Now, the very first story I want to talk about is sort of a detective story. I guess a lot of our root cause analyses are. And we, when we decided we have to make a culture talk, engineers make a culture talk, what do we need to do? Well, we need to tell stories. We need to set things up. We need to engage the audience. What does all that mean? We spent weeks trying to figure out how we're gonna set up the setting for these. And so I guess, imagine a dark night in Dublin, charcoal gray streaked across the sky. The rain splatters a shuttered bedroom window. Inside, a pager begins its dance of death, buzzing its way towards the chasm at the end of the bedside table. A hand reaches out and stills it. There's been a problem. We need you to come in. There's a clap and a fluorescent hum lights the cavernous room. 50, 60 people begin to file in. And on this wall, on the left, the candied red and green stripes rise and fall playfully with the fortunes of servers, clusters, and empires. You would be forgiven for thinking that when these 60 men and women put on their clothes, that they donned armor. You'd be forgiven for thinking that when they holstered their phones, that they took up a sword. These few, these errant knights, converged in the center of the room, in the center of it all. It was time. Time to find out if that 1 a.m. page was just noise. So that detective story happened actually more than you might expect, and it's a really interesting one, but the one that I actually want to tell right now is the one that happened the next day. When we asked the question that we really needed to ask, which is why were 60 people in a room answering that page? So we sat down and cracked open the logs to look at what kind of questions were people asking? What was being said? How were we working this? Why did we need 60 people there? It didn't take very long to find patterns. It turned out the first 5 or 10 people were there asking a lot of the questions. They were kind of incident commander. They were running a lot of the root causing, figuring out what questions to ask next. Like, what clusters are up? What organizations, what customers are affected, and who knows the information we need to know. And they would ask these 50 questions, and one person would be answering the same question every time. This guy, Leonard, he really bright, passionate guy, great root cause solver. He showed up in the logs all the time, and it was always to say, yeah, these clusters over in Africa are green, but 3 of them are on their way to be red now, or telling people exactly what was up and which clusters were up and down. In fact, this was the case for all of them. There was a reason we had 60 people in the room. Those 5 or 10 people were needed to kind of run the incident and stuff. And there were 50 people who knew 50 different pieces of data and would retrieve them for you when you wanted to know the answers to different questions. It seemed a little inefficient to us, just a little bit. So we put on our thinking caps. And what do you do when there is a manual toil problem that keeps recurring? What do we do when the processes are not democratic, it's not visible enough? We automate it. That's what SRE does. So we went pretty quickly to a thing I think a lot of us have sort of either dreamed about or begun building, or some of us have even built. SRE bot. The thing at the future of humanity, the thing at the end of the road, the light at the end of the tunnel will solve all our problems. We'll have it. What if that bot could be sitting there collecting all the logs and answering the questions that people have during the incident? Which clusters are up and down? Which organizations are affected? What endpoints are causing us problems? What if it could do some of that summary stuff, like actually tell us which things seem like they're the most broken right now? What if it could notify the right people to get in that room? We could reduce this from 60 people to 5 like that, and we could use those 5 people to do what they do best. Leonard, who's, again, a really creative guy, could be doing something other than hitting refresh on the cluster status page all day. We just needed a few pieces of data to get this to happen, though. We got 50 pieces of data. They have different access rules. They are at different endpoints. We needed to know where they were, how to get them, and what kind of decision processes people went through to find this stuff. So I went down to Leonard, and he was already excited by the time I got there. He had heard wind of what we're doing and said, thank you so much. We have needed someone to automate away these ridiculously stressful processes. My doctor says I have to quit my job. My wife is really pissed at how often I get her up at night. It's really stressful. So at this point, I'm seeing my bot right down the road. Like, we are in complete sync. He wants me to automate. I want to automate. It's slam dunk. I'm getting my bot. So could you give me the URL? I just need to know when the clusters are up and down so I can write a robot to do that. I guess, yeah. I could do that, but why? I thought you were going to automate the problems that I had. Yeah, your problem is you got 60 people in a room, right? Well, yeah, that is my problem. I've got to invite 60 people to a room. I've got the most stressful 5 minutes of the incident right at the beginning when it's most critical to catch the problem and mitigate it. And I'm trying to figure out 60 different people. I'm typing /invite, and I'm not that good a typist, so I'm mistyping half of them. And this is what's got my heart rate up. You mean you want me to write a group invite? That's not a bot. That's not gonna get me flying cars. That's not gonna solve world peace. But that's what he wanted. You know what? This is a point at which I should have like stopped and said, okay, just tell me a little more about why you want that and stuff. But at the time, I was so caught up on the bot that I just said, what do you do when someone just doesn't understand? Like, you clearly just didn't get what the vision was. The right thing to do is talk at them for 20 minutes. And that's what I did. Probably should have noticed that he was getting quieter and quieter throughout, but I was having a lot of fun talking. At the end, he's like, all sounds neat, but I need you to solve my problem. Like, Leonard, listen, there'd be 5 people in the room. You wouldn't need to invite them all if we actually just solved the problem. You'd get to do the good stuff. I get it, but my wife and doctor aren't gonna get it. I come back without the URL because we just argued too long. It wasn't like anyone was stonewalling, but over the next few weeks, we saw that this was a problem. We didn't get all the URLs we needed, all the data we needed, and eventually people stopped returning our calls because we were talking a little more than we were listening. Well, at this point, the hero in the story normally has a light bulb go up over his head and say, I know what I did wrong. They realize humbly that they've been not empathizing, that we need to go back and fix the situation, and they take the right action and they save the day. I took the right action, but I gotta admit that this time, the reason I took the action was, fine, I'll solve your problem. I sat down, I wrote a little bot, you could message it and give it a list of people's emails, multiple lists even, lots of groups, and then you could like invite it, a group, into your channel, and it all worked. It's 40 lines of code. Doesn't get me any closer to the world I want. Whatever, go down and demo it to him. Like, here, guys, I know it's not much. Don't worry about, like, it's just 40 lines, but here you go. This is, I think it's what you asked for. And they were so excited. Leonard, like, thank you, finally. This is gonna be so much better. And he started inviting people to the bot right away. And then he said, you know, I noticed while you're talking that their robot, you had a robot that was handling some really, really important task, a manual task. What if, now just bear with me, what if we had a robot that could tell people if the cluster were up or down? What a great idea! Let's get right to it. I've got my bot now, it's starting to get better. It turns out that Utopia's a little harder than I thought, but it's still, it's getting better. The problem that I encountered there was really that Leonard had no real reason to believe that I could actually fulfill any of the things that I said I could fulfill. He had no reason to believe that I knew what actually was going on in his life, what the actual important problems were. He just knew I'd looked at some logs. I hadn't lived Leonard's problem. And we're gonna come with three takeaways here today. There are three major themes that we noticed through a lot of these stories, and that's the first one. What I also gotten from this is to be humble. From each engagement that I go to now, I try really hard not to pump up SRE like it's some superpowered godlike thing. You know, anyway, so this next story compares SRE to Superman. Now, Superman, for those of you who don't know him, is like the most powerful superhero. Like, they've thrown every power of the book at him. He's got flight, invincibility, and he really doesn't have any problems. They had to invent a space rock just so he'd have a problem. Superman does something weird, though. He dresses up as a dork and goes to a desk job where he uses none of his skills, not a single one. He does copy editing, puts on these glasses that make it look like he can't actually see through buildings, and he acts like he's clumsy. What is he doing this for? He doesn't need to hide from people, he's invincible. Superman's doing this because Superman has a problem. Superman's problem is that nobody listens to Superman. Imagine yourself walking down the street, and, okay, imagine me walking down the street. Superman comes down out of the sky wearing blue pajamas and a red cape, underwear on the outside. He floats down 3 feet up above you and says, hey, I've been reading the studies, and when people get a little bit of weight on, it starts to degrade their quality of life. You shave off years off your life. I think you'd be a lot happier, you know, if you just hit the gym, buddy. This guy, he's got like abs out to here, and he's never hit the gym in his life. What do you think I said? Piss off, Superman. Superman has never hit the gym in his life. If he hit the gym in his life, he knocked it down the block. That's about it. That's why Superman acts like Clark Kent. He does it to empathize. He does some things, like, for example, building a chatbot, solving some problems that he wouldn't normally need to solve, in order to build empathy and trust with people. And SRE is a lot like that. And I think that's what this next story is about.
Yeah, so there was a lesson we learned from the first story. But there was another lesson we also had to learn. Now, in every Superman story, he spends most of his time living as a human and pretending to be Clark Kent. But there always comes a point where there's some problem that happens that humans can't solve. He has to become Superman. And in this engagement, we spent so much time trying to be Clark Kent, trying to live their problem, that we forgot that we had to actually be Superman at the end of the day. So this was supposed to be a really simple engagement, just to start a relationship with this team. Not super heavy, not a big commitment. We just sent in basically one person, Clark Kent, all alone to start it. And the conversation was pretty simple, pretty understandable. This is who we are, this is what SRE does, this is how we'd like to help you. Maybe you can let us come in and start picking up some of the work and maybe change the way you do things. And they were pretty friendly, seemed like a pretty good start. Yeah, come on in. So we get in there and immediately it becomes apparent that this team is kind of too busy to succeed. Their service had scaled massively in a really short amount of time, way faster than they had thought it would. They had less headcount and less budget than they thought they would have. And they were doing all they could, running as fast as they could, just to stay in place, just to keep the boat from sinking. So our first strategy was, yeah, let's just live their problem. Let's build trust. Let's be one of them. Let's pick up some of their backlog tickets. Let's do on-call rotations. Let's just show them we know their pain. So in order to do that, we had to learn how the service worked. In order to do that, we quickly found that pretty much all information, all knowledge about the service was in one person's head. And she was a mastermind, but because of the way things were set up, she was basically spending all of her time answering other people's questions and fighting fires. And she couldn't get anything done because she was constantly time-bound by this. And other people couldn't get anything done because they constantly had to ask her questions. The first time we went up to find out some information we needed, it felt a little bit like this. There were three people at her desk asking her questions, five more chat windows open, and her phone had started to ring. So they were really, really busy. And they were kind of too busy to work with us. And we went on for a while just trying to be really passive, but we didn't actually make any progress. What we were expecting from the engagement was they would come to us and say, yeah, here are all these things you can help us with. We would love for you to do this. We would love for you to solve this problem. But it actually ended up being like, I don't know, find something to do. And yeah, they weren't really proactive about helping us. So we had to change strategy. We had to be proactive. And what we ended up doing was we started crashing their meetings, we crashed their stand-ups, we stalked them in the hallways, we scheduled regular check-ins, we went in on their code reviews. And that had a good effect. We started moving things forward, we started forcing some of the change and some of the things that we wanted to see, but it also had a negative effect. And that was that we became this pestering little kid that no one wanted to deal with. We were asking every developer's least favorite question, where are the docs for this? No one wants to be asked that. So they got kind of reluctant to help us. And there was also kind of a strain. Because from our perspective, it felt like, wow, it's really hard to make any progress here. This team is like grinding teeth. But from their perspective, it's like, well, S3 came in and made all these promises about how they were going to improve our lives and about how they were totally awesome superheroes. But all they're doing is just asking us stupid questions and not really, solving anything for us. So there's this disconnect. One example. We had a conversation that went a little bit like this. They told us, one thing I guess that would help us is we have all these certificates that are expiring. It would be great if you could rotate them for us. We haven't had to do it in a while. We kind of forget how the process works. It's a little shady. Okay, so you're doing that manually? Okay, well, we've actually done this for a couple other teams. We know how to automate it. We could do the same for you. You wouldn't have to worry about forgetting to do this, panicking at the last minute. Well, we've thought about that, but we kind of have to re-architect this and that, and it's a total pain. It'd be better if you just took an hour to do it this morning, and then you'd totally be done. So at this point, we realized that we still were coming from two completely different perspectives. And if we had left that day, we wouldn't have actually caused any durable change. Nothing would have been different as a result of us being there. From our perspective, it's like, why would you not automate this? You have better things to do. From their perspective, why wouldn't you automate this? You have better things to do. Why would you automate this? You have better things to do. And the real problem here was we were still trying so hard to be Clark Kent that we forgot to demonstrate our value. We forgot to actually show how things could be different. So we went back to the drawing board again, and we said, how do we do this? How do we really help show them something persuasive that's going to demonstrate what we can do? And what we ended up doing was actually really simple, like stupid simple. We just went and we took some dashboards that we had built for other services, just like simple quality service dashboards, and we plugged their data into it, and we scheduled a demo to show them. And we were kind of anxious at this point. We thought they weren't going to be super receptive. Why aren't you rotating my certificates? Why are you building these stupid dashboards? I know React is cool right now and everyone wants to use it, but... And we showed them anyways. And immediately, they're actually really excited. They grabbed their laptop and they started clicking through the website. It's like, wow, what is this data? I didn't realize that was this way. Oh, I thought we had more nines in our SLA than we do. This is really, really cool. Why didn't you all show us this 4 months ago? Guess we probably should have. And one of the things that you have to remember is that people really care about the quality of their service. And the visions that we have are often the same as the visions that the teams we engage with have. We want a better experience for our customers. So we want our services to be more reliable. But as SREs, we have the luxury of being able to step back, being able to look at multiple teams and think about patterns and practices and think about how to do reliability as an industry, as a whole. But the people we work with often are thrown into situations they weren't prepared for. Their services have scaled faster than they thought they could, and they don't have time to think about how to do things in an objective way. But they still care as much as you do, and you can't forget that. So we learned here that you have to build trust, you have to live the problem, but you can't get stuck being an ops team. You have to also demonstrate your value and constantly assess whether you're moving things closer to the vision of SRE that you want.
Yeah, it's actually one of the only ways that you can fail. Our job is to not just build reliable systems, not to make the systems that we're working with reliable. Our job is to build cultures, companies, and teams that keep building reliable software. You want to make a change so that years down the road, when you've been hit by a bus, why does everybody talk about being hit by a bus? Does that happen a lot to developers? Raise your hand if you've been hit by a bus. Okay.
Survivor bias.
You want to make lasting change so that everybody can get back to the job of building awesome features. Now, this is really the only way to fail at SRE. And so I guess, next story. Speaking of failures.
Really?
The next story.
Actually, before I talk about this next story, I want to talk about hero culture for a second. As SREs, we hate hero culture. We do not like heroes. We do not like incentives that create heroic acts because it creates bottlenecks. It creates bus factor. It does not help us scale, and it does not help us build reliable services. And when we go in and we see hero culture in action, we want to stamp it out. We want to convince people to stop doing that. But you also have to be aware of something. You have to remember that hero culture does give people a lot of things. When you're on a team of heroes that are constantly fighting incidents, it builds a sense of camaraderie. When you are constantly saving the day, it gives you a sense of urgency and meaning. It helps you showcase your skills and feel important. Now, that's not necessarily to say that hero culture is a good thing. We want to get rid of it. And as an SRE coming in, we're coming from the best of intentions. We say, you've been doing things wrong. Your life would be qualitatively better if you stopped doing things this way, and your service would be more scalable and reliable if you stopped doing things this way. But sometimes, to the people you're talking to, it can feel like you're saying everything you've built up in your career, all the talents that you have, and the things that you feel make you important as an engineer or an administrator, that's worthless, and you should just throw that all away and do things the way I want. So you have to be aware of that attitude. Now, I want to talk about an engagement we had that was one of our first SRE engagements. It's actually before we had an SRE organization. And we were just starting to think about how do we change the way we do things? And how do we start? Well, we thought, let's just find a team, let's find a service, and let's just try an engagement. And then from there, we'll see what works, see what doesn't, and maybe build an organization organically from that. So we found this team. It happened to be a huge service, highly complex. And immediately, it was kind of apparent they had a really tight ship. Great command and control, great information management. It's another way of saying they were really set in their ways. They didn't want to tell anybody anything, and there was one person at the top who made all the decisions. But we didn't know that yet. We thought, wow, these people are cool. They are doing awesome work, and we're going to do SRE for them. So we put together a proposal, we met, and it basically kind of looked somewhat like this. We're going to take over your operations, but we're not going to be your ops team. There's this SRE thing, we're gonna focus on automation, reducing toil, it's great stuff, you should let us do it, it's gonna be awesome. They actually stopped reading at this point. but we didn't know that yet either. So they agreed to let us help them, and they let us in the door. And this is kind of what we were expecting. We were so excited. We're going to get to drive this fancy car for this fancy service. It's going to be awesome. And they let us in. They showed us their incidents, their code, their backlog, their postmortems, things that they hadn't shared with us before. They let us in, and quickly it became apparent that it was actually a little more like this. We are totally screwed. First mistake we made here was we probably should have recognized that they were being really secretive and that they didn't trust us. But all those S3 things that we wanted to do, you don't have time for that. You are just going to be doing constant firefighting, constant pager duty. The service is held together by duct tape and the sheer force of will of a megalomaniac. It was kind of the platonic ideal of hero culture. Not great. But let's try to make it lurk. Let's see if we can get out of the situation. 1 month in, the service had the worst outage in history they've ever had. And it went on like this for months and months and months. There was not really an on-call rotation. There was the concept of everyone being online and chat 24/7. That was, you know, the non-on-call rotation. So how do you get out of this? How do you get out of the fact that we are just an operations team all over again for the worst run service in the history of man? Well, we got really systematic about quick wins. Every time we took on a ticket, every time we tried to root cause an incident, we tried to do a little bit, just add a little bit of something that would help us do it differently the next time, that would help save us some time. Maybe we can save 1 minute in our first week. That's going to compound over time. So we really focused in on that. But as a result of that, there was a lot of fighting between this team, because we had come in and we had made all these big promises about how we were going to change the world and how we were going to be awesome and make things better. And we also, at the same time, said, you kind of suck, because you're all heroes, and you should be doing things differently. But then we came in, and we were doing everything slower and worse than them. They're like, you're kind of like a bad version of us. So hard to demonstrate our value that way. They didn't really trust us. And whenever we tried to do things in a different way, they got really combative for us doing it in that way. And it got to the point where we had to take some kind of offbeat strategies, and this is not something I recommend at all, but we had a developer who we just hired, and they were in the process of getting their visa. And so we had this 3-month period where they didn't know about this person. And so we were like, great, this person can do 100% dev work, and they won't make them do ops, and they can build this awesome feature for us. We needed some help automating something that took a lot of manual toil. It took, honestly, hours out of our day. We had some dedicated people just to doing this task. And we said, you have 3 months to build this service, and it's going to help us out, and then we'll come in, and things will be great. So they did it, and they did a really, really great job. And it saved us a lot of time. It saved us hours out of our day, and life started to look kind of good. It's like, yes, we are finally starting to do this SRE thing. It was tough for a while. We didn't think we would get out of it, but things actually feel kind of good now. We get to go home at the end of the night. I saw my first movie in 6 months. It's great. And what do you do when you start to feel like you have things under control? Like, you've taken on a challenge and you've surpassed it. Well, you look for the next challenge. You look to expand your scope and expand your responsibility. So we went back to this team and we did just that. We said, hey, you can see how much we've improved things. You can see how we've changed the practices of how you run your service. You can see that it's more reliable. Everything we said about ourselves is totally true. So you should let us run more of your service. And at first they were agreeable. They said, yeah, you know, actually we agree. We've seen how much positive effect you've had. We've seen how you've changed things. But we still don't really like you. So actually we've built our own SRE team over here, and they're going to do everything from now on, and you can kind of let yourself out. What? What are you talking about? I thought we were like totally awesome. Man, I thought we were totally succeeding. This kind of felt like a huge failure, a huge slap in the face. And I don't know, it still kind of feels like a slap in the face. So I guess my conclusion here is basically you have to live their problem, you have to demonstrate your value. And sometimes you just totally fail and everything sucks.
Whoa. We can't end on that. Seriously? Yeah, it felt like a huge failure. Can I?
Sure.
Okay. All right, like, all right, let's do the conclusion again. It did feel like an absolutely huge failure, but we've had a lot of chance to talk about it over the last few months, and there's some questions that we could ask ourselves. I think this is a lot bigger than just us. How about after we were unceremoniously kicked to the curb, did reliability improve?
Yeah.
After we were fired mercilessly, did the toil, the human operations cost decrease?
Did.
Did everything keep working after the worst moment of our lives happened?
Yeah, we're still in business.
Yeah, do you think we had anything to do with that? Like,
well, yeah, but I didn't get to be their SRE.
Yeah, well, I didn't get to build a robot either, so we can all have our delusions. I think you're right. It feels like a failure. It is always going to feel like a failure. But honestly, this is one of the most successful failures that we've had. The team actually built another SRE team. They learned how to do SRE. We did not, by ourselves, improve the entire reliability of the service. Like, we did improve things while we're there, but when we're gone, we don't get to do that anymore. But the team that we worked with could do it themselves when we left. In a lot of ways, it's even better. And I know you're looking at me, that is the biggest rationalization in the universe when you just failed massively. But let me have this, people. The third takeaway, and one of the most important, is that our job is to build teams and cultures. Our job is to spread the knowledge of those 100 failures across the teams. At Microsoft, we've got more than 100 teams. When I walked in here, it looked like pandemonium. They were all doing different things, and they'd all experienced their first 5 or 10 massive failures, if everybody has. But they were different ones. And there was a massive opportunity here to become sort of the culture circulation system of the company, where we go out to one of these teams, we engage, we live their problem, we learn what it is, we solve it in the small. We're not trying to build a utopia yet here. We're just trying to understand the things that they've learned. Has anyone gotten through all their 100 failures yet? Okay, come back to me. We're all on this journey, and the teams that we're working with are really smart and on this journey too. The thing we can do is connect them. We go in there, we live their problem, we learn their failures. We breathe that in, and then we build tools and processes and ideas and documentation, best practices, that we then breathe out to the next team. We go in and we engage with that team. The same people who are in that first team are now in the second one, and they know the first 5 failures. Like, the key's in the lock. We do this enough, and everybody is breathing clean air. And we do this enough across companies, and we do this enough at these conferences, where this is another place we're breathing in. Then everybody who walks in off the street, who, when you hire them, is going to know another one of those 5 or 10 failures instead of the 0 they usually know now, or the 1 or 2. And we're going to be composed of people who already know most of them. We're going to have clean air for everybody. I guess the takeaway that I would have is, remember past me. Keep building the world that past me so desperately needed when he was frantically looking on YouTube and blogs and finding nothing about what kind of failures he was in for. Make it so I don't have to bring down 1,000 servers in an upgrade, and that is all that I need from you. So go forth and make past me happy.